Why did you become a vet? To care for dogs and cats? To return the love they give us? To comfort them when they're in pain? To give them a better chance at a longer life? At IDEXX, that's why we created IDEXX Cancer DX testing, to help detect canine lymphoma early. Because if we find it early, we can fight it early. Get details at IDEXX.com/cancerdx360.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. We want to thank our friends at IDEXX for sponsoring this race-approved CE podcast as we talk about cancer detection, cancer diagnosis, and our goal is to educate our fellow colleagues on the importance of early cancer detection in canine patients, showcasing how IDEXX's specialized cancer screening blood test can enhance diagnostic capabilities, support clinical decision-making, and improve patient outcomes through proactive care, which is what it's all about. And joining us are our wonderful colleagues, Dr. Dana Connell and Dr. Zachary Newman. How are you, my friends?
Doing great today.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Our pleasure. And it's so nice because you two actually really know each other very well. So it's a super casual, fun conversation.
Well, yeah. Apparently we don't even finish each other's sentences. We just say the exact same thing at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, we can jinx each other the whole time.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to listen to this in synchrony.
Yes, in sync. I love it. A little bit of information about our great colleagues here. Dana Connell received her DVM degree and Master's of Public Health from the University of Florida. Go
Gators.
There it is. Following a small animal surgery and medicine internship at Auburn University, Dana pursued a three-year oncology residency at the University of Illinois. She obtained an additional master's degree with a thesis focused on the use of itraconazole as a chemosensitizer in the treatment of metastatic osteosarcoma. Upon becoming boarded in medical oncology, she moved to Greenville, South Carolina, and worked as a clinical oncologist before moving into a medical directorship position. She served as the oncology representative on the Ethos Specialty Advisory Board and the specialty representative on the South Carolina Association of Veterinarians Board of Directors. Outside of work, Dana focuses on spending time with her family, including her husband and two children, along with art and baking, particularly French
French patisserie, you know, like Great British Bake Off.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Gotcha. It goes to show you what my palate is. If it's not an Uncrustable, I'm not interested. So that's great.
A lovely croissant, a lovely mille feuille. So much fun.
I love it. Great. And Dr. Zachary Newman attended the University of Illinois for a total of 10 years, encompassing his undergraduate studies, veterinary studies, and then returning after a one-year small animal medicine and surgery rotating internship at the University of Minnesota for a three-year residency program in medical oncology. During his residency, he also completed his master's degree in veterinary clinical medicine, researching osteosarcoma in dogs. He became board certified medical oncologist through ACVIM in 2015. He's been in Jackson, Florida with Southeast Veterinary Oncology and Internal Medicine ever since. He became medical director there in 2021 and is currently the vice chair for Ethos Veterinary Health. Outside of work, Dr. Newman stays busy running a small woodworking business, Baba Boards, making charcuterie boards and renovating homes with his husband, Worth. He volunteers his time as a board director for a local charity, V for Victory, benefiting families battling cancer. He's an avid beach volleyball player, runner, and traveler, but prefers to spend as much time as possible with his perfect golden retriever rescue, Boulder. Love the name. So cute. Okay, well, we got a lot to unpack here, my friends. Thank you so much for being here. Okay, Dana, I'll start with you because this is very, I always like to see how our interests, like what our why, and what made each of you choose to specialize in oncology?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, I would say that when I went into vet school, I didn't know that specialties were necessarily a thing or an option. And when I started learning about that, I knew that I would want to specialize in something, but I didn't know exactly what. Florida is nice from the standpoint that we go into clinics in our third year. We do split clinics. So part of it is in your third year, part of it's in your fourth year. And I had the benefit of being able to go through a few different rotations. I thought that I wanted to do radiology for a hot minute. And then realized that I still wanted to interact with animals beyond doing ultrasounds and things like that. And I'm an extrovert, and I don't know that sitting in a room by myself is really going to be like the best thing for my mental health, where I can't talk to people on a regular basis. And so I remember my first oncology rotation, I took care of a cane corso who had osteosarcoma, and it was one of the most rewarding experiences I had. I was kind of the conduit of communication between the owner, who was very, very far away. He actually flew the dog into Florida for treatments and things of that nature. And I was able to really build a relationship with that owner. And so I felt like oncology was the best way to meld internal medicine workup, management of the case. There's a ton of imaging, so it still allowed me to do a lot of radiology. But I love talking to people, and I love empowering people with information that hopefully makes their quality of life and their animal's quality of life better. And I found that niche in oncology. I'm actually really interested. I haven't heard Zach's story about this, despite the fact that we know each other really well. I don't know why he chose oncology. So I'm also interested to hear your story, Zach.
Ooh, yeah, mine's a little different from yours. I think the real draw for me was I love a puzzle. I love complexity. And I had joined the internal medicine club my first year of vet school. And I realized very quickly that all the cases that I was really interested in were all the oncology cases. There's just something fascinating about like these cells that are just able to do whatever the heck they want. And as kind of morbid as that sounds, it just was that, you know, that added layer of complexity that I loved. Got into the research side of things pretty early on and had two really great mentors, Laura Garrett and Tim Fan, who are the oncologists at the University of Illinois. And then their residents were pretty awesome at the time too. So just kind of realized like I found my people. And then the other side of it is and most veterinarians, I feel like, love puppies, and I am obsessed with a senior pet. And as we know, most of our patients are going to be senior pets in the oncology world. Sadly, not all of them. But it's one of the biggest draws for me continuously is I see that old gray face and it just melts my heart. It's a puppy for some, but a senior pet for the others. That's me.
I love a wise old dog. Dogs are kind of my favorite. Maybe that you've pulled on a thread there. We all love a wise old dog in oncology.
Right. You know. And it's like just about keeping them comfortable and happy and giving them the good quality of life. I feel like that's what every oncologist always stresses, quality of life.
So true. I mean, they earned each gray whisker, you know, and I tell them in their senior years, there are no rules when you're a senior pet, which is great. You earned that, you know, the retirement years. So,
yep. Every pup cup.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about canine cancer screening, Zach, because, you know, I love that we have something finally that we can use, and specifically lymphoma. So why is that so important?
Yeah, I mean, just starting off, like lymphoma is one of the most common cancers that we see, and it doesn't just hit our old pets. It's not just those senior pets. It does hit them at a more adult stage age. And I think it's, you know, it comes back to catching things early. If you can catch a cancer earlier on, we know for most cancers that they're going to have a better prognosis. And it does hold true with lymphomas. If they are more late stage and sick, they're not going to respond very well to treatment. So if we can catch those cases earlier and get them into the oncologist earlier, I think that we'll start seeing that maybe the prognosis may be better. It could start changing if we're able to catch those cases early. And sometimes, you know, I think we get some pushback on, okay, there's this positive test, but you don't have any clinical signs of the disease yet. But my point always is we're busy as oncologists, unfortunately. Like our schedules are often very booked and full, and it may be a couple weeks before we're able to get them in. When we get a case that has lymphoma and the client calls and their dog has enlarged lymph nodes and a diagnosis maybe already of lymphoma, we often are trying to get them in that same week because we know how quickly the disease can just take a turn and turn for the worse. And they go down that hill where they are now sick, and we're not going to get a great response in most of those pets. So I think even, you know, if we're able to catch these cases earlier on and they have a positive result and we can get them on the schedule, there's a decent chance that some of those are already going to have clinical signs by the time they get to the clinic to see us. But even if they don't have clinical signs, and we just want to keep a very close eye on them and monitor them and catch them earlier on before they get sick, I think that is super important.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I think you think about human care, human healthcare, and Zach, you can weigh in on this too, but cancer screening is just routine, as a routine part of human healthcare, right? You reach a certain age and it is automatic, at least in the States, that you start to do routine cancer screening, whether that's mammography for women, whether that's colonoscopy for everybody. And maybe you're a little bit earlier to do those things if you have an increased risk for either of those cancers. But it is just, it's part of our routine healthcare, and we want the same thing for our pets, right?
Exactly.
And I feel like sometimes when they hear the word cancer, the diagnostic, they're at the point where financially they may not be able to afford those things. And therefore having a screening tool ahead of time could potentially prepare them for those things down the road. Right, Dana?
I do think so. Yes. I think it allows time that's not in an emotional, very rushed way to have the conversation of what would I do next? Because unfortunately, in many of the situations that Zach just mentioned, we have people coming to us with patients that are sick. They have to make an immediate decision that day. We're encouraging them to start chemotherapy potentially that day in a sick animal because we want to try to help them to feel better. If we have some protected time beforehand of how would we handle this moving forward if confirmatory diagnosis comes back on this seemingly healthy patient, that allows some decisions to be made with the family in advance. The test itself, CancerDx, is very affordable. And that was one of the goals, to make it affordable enough that we could have broad access to the test that cancer care in general, and honestly, pet care in general, I think has gone quite up in the past decades of our care, and making things more accessible to our clients, to our patients. I think everyone deserves to have good care. And that is one of the things that we are definitely striving for.
Yeah, let's unpack that a little bit more. Let's talk about it. What is IDEXX's CancerDx, and how does it work? What results can a veterinarian expect from CancerDx?
Yeah, so CancerDx is really new. It launched in March of this year, so March of 2025. And it is a test that is what I would classically call a liquid biopsy test, which essentially means that we just need a specimen of EDTA-treated whole blood, and we need a specimen of serum. So your lavender top tube and your red top tube that you would normally send off for your CBC and chemistry, those are the exact things that we need to run this test. And it's looking for biomarkers that are specific to canine lymphoma. The lovely thing about this from an oncologist's perspective is that it is highly specific. So not only highly specific in the classic way we think of specificity, it is 99% specific when we compare that detection to the detection of things like inflammatory diseases and healthy patients, but it also gives you a result that either says consistent with lymphoma or not consistent with lymphoma. So rather than being a pan-cancer screening test that's looking more at risk, this is looking specifically for a disease so that you can build out a disease-specific monitoring plan and have earlier support of those clinical diagnoses of lymphoma, especially in the patients that look like they have lymphoma. So from an oncologist perspective, the specificity is extremely high. The sensitivity is about 80%, 79%, which is really exciting as well. And then if we start to look at some of the additional things that you get from the assay, in a portion of the positives, you are given a phenotype. So that B cell versus T cell, this is really important to us as oncologists, because that is one of the major prognostic indicators that we use in lymphoma. We know that in general, our high-grade B-cell lymphomas tend to do better overall than our high-grade T-cell lymphomas. And there are oncologists in the world, I think Zach is one of them, that treats a T-cell lymphoma differently at the outset than he would treat a B-cell lymphoma. So not only does it have prognostic implications, but to us as specialists, it can guide what we choose next as our first treatment, what we think is going to be most effective for that patient. So it can be used in our well patients. It can be used in our sick patients. So ones that we suspect have lymphoma. It is nice because it's minimally invasive. It gives you a lot of information. And, you know, this is something that can be really easily worked into your protocols for screening, your preventive care protocols. It can be worked into your sick protocols because, again, it's using the same specimens that you would use for a CBC and a chemistry that you would send off today. So really exciting work that's going on. And I think one of the first times that we've ever seen something so specific in naming a cancer and having that ability to make that those decisions specific to that cancer for that patient.
Well, and jumping on that comment, I mean, it's funny that I have also had a couple of cases that have contributed to that lowered than 100% specificity, barely, because they still had a lymphoproliferative cancer, which was interesting. They weren't positive for lymphoma. They ended up being another lymphoproliferative cancer though. But that's not obviously going to be all those cases, but it's a couple of them were my doing.
Well, and I think it's interesting to focus on that too, because it does, I think that underlines the complexity of the cancers in general that we're dealing with, but also lymphoma, because when we think about lymphoma, I think at the heart of it, we think it's one disease, but there's about 35 different subtypes of lymphoma. And there are a ton of other cancers that have a shared cell origin. They still come from lymphocytes, from malignant lymphocytes in some way, shape, or form. So it's interesting to find such a high specificity for a test that is really looking at a ton of different things and giving that clarity to those pet owners and to our veterinarians.
Yeah, it's been super helpful.
And Zach, are there any special sample preparations or fasting requirements needed for this?
No, none. I mean, it's literally as easy as sending off the blood work you'd be sending off for a senior health panel or a baseline CBC chem UA. And then it's an add-on test with those samples. Super simple.
And Zach, are there any special sample preparations or fasting requirements?
None at all. It's as simple as sending off a CBC chem UA for a baseline health profile panel. I mean, it's very easy. I feel like it's been one of the easiest tests to have in addition to the normal health panel that we submit.
And Dana, what's the typical turnaround time?
It's about 2 to 3 days in the States, 2 to 4 days in Canada. And when you do have it included in one of those wellness profiles or included with your CBC chemistry, you will get those results on your CBC chem on their normal turnaround time. So you'll start to, you know, make the appropriate decisions for your patient based on those initial insights while you're waiting for your cancer DX to come back. But it is very short. We wanted it to be days, not weeks, because as Zach mentioned, days do matter in these patients that have lymphoma. And we do not want to be waiting weeks to get them into the oncologist or to get them in for further care.
And we could still run this test if they're sick or wellness patients?
Correct. You can run this in a patient who has no clinical signs of disease, but is in an appropriate risk profile, meaning patients who are 7 years and above, canine patients who are 7 years and above, and are at risk breeds starting at the age of 4 and above. And there's a whole list that we have that's supported by literature of what those at risk breeds are. But I would say that most of the people listening to this probably just imagined a golden retriever or a Labrador or boxer. You would be right. It is pretty common that we kind of know what our cancer prone breeds are. And those would be more appropriate to start testing when they're younger, because we know that unfortunately they do get cancer a little bit younger than the other breeds do. But this can also be used in our sick patients too. Ones that we suspect have lymphoma, whether that's because of nebulous signs. I like to talk about the golden retriever with a nebulopathy, that lymphoma is on the list, but you can't quite confirm it. It's a really great example of when to use this test, but also in the patients that come in with enlarged lymph nodes and you would like to get a little bit more information. That's a great way to use it as well.
Zach, I want to talk about some of the data that was collected. How did you collect the data that went into the Cancer DX white paper?
This is one of the fun parts of my job, in my opinion, is I still get to dabble a little bit in the research side. So when I was in residency, we did do a lot of research at the University of Illinois. Loved that aspect of being in vet med, especially when it's comparative. Like, we did a lot of osteosarcoma research, which mirrors what osteosarcoma looks like in children. And going into private practice, you kind of lose that and you don't have as much access to research anymore. But through IDEX, it's been really rewarding and honestly has somewhat revitalized my love for the job. After so many years, you can imagine it starts to get a little bit difficult day in, day out dealing with cancer. So this is one of the things that I feel like has really just revitalized my love for the field. But these are just patients that are coming in naturally with a diagnosis of cancer in general. So there were patients that were other cancers and then lymphoma. And then we also had patients that had non-cancerous conditions that went into this paper that were a third grouping. And those were mostly, our own pets with inflammatory conditions, arthritis and such, maybe IBD, et cetera. We're seeing these patients already. They're going into, the oncologist or to me to have a discussion about, what does this look like? What does the treatment look like? And we were just talking to them about getting blood work and getting these samples to submit to IDEX to validate the test, which it honestly was one of the easiest trials that I've been part of, just from a ease. So going back to when you asked, like, is it difficult to collect these samples? No. And even in the trial part, it was super simple for us to get these samples and get the clients on board with being a part of the trial. I think anyone who hears, about the possibility of adding their pet to a trial, they typically they're excited. They want to jump on board if they can contribute to science in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah. And so in addition to Zach and other oncology specialists, we were able to take that information, and that information flowed into our white paper, which is currently published, supporting the data, the specificity, sensitivity that I mentioned at the beginning. All of that has been published in the white paper. And excitingly, a lot of work has still happened, and we're looking at submitting a peer-reviewed publication by the end of this year. I think that it's great to have a situation as a specialist where you have colleagues who are willing to do the work in private practice, because what we all want to see when we look at a paper, we love seeing a cohort of animals that is highly reflective and mirrors what we would see in practice. And so some of these data sets are really pristine and great to look at from certain groups that are out there. I want to see what's happening in the clinic. I want to see what's happening out in the field in real life. And so being able to source this information from people who are boots on the ground, doing the work, having the conversations, that's been highly valuable to us, not only in understanding how the test is acting out there, but also giving people that piece of information that they can tie back to when they start to talk about this in the field with their clients.
Yeah. I mean, as a generalist, that's what's most important to me too. Just, tell me what works. Does the data show that it's representation of the population of patients that I see in day-to-day practice? And it certainly sounds like it is. Let's talk about this, because we know that as veterinarians, sometimes we have a hard time implementing something into process. We go to the conferences, we hear about these things, and then we try to figure out the how and the why. So, can you share some examples of how veterinarians are incorporating Cancer DX into their practice?
Are you saying that we're skeptics? No, not us.
Never. Veterinarians in general are just not skeptics, right?
But rightfully so, right? I mean, it's you have to be skeptical of things when they're first released to be a good practitioner and a good scientist.
Yeah. I would definitely agree with that. I think from the data that we can see, this test has already been used in a myriad of use cases, which is really exciting. So I see some general practitioners who are incorporating this into every wellness panel for which it's appropriate, meaning specifically in those at-risk breeds or in that at-risk age range of 7 and above, to get additional insights. I mean, we have to remember that the most common result that you are going to receive in those healthy appearing patients is that dog does not have lymphoma, has a result not consistent with lymphoma. Similar, again, I'm going to go back to, you know, the mammography example. I would say most women come out of their mammograms yearly with a, you know, not consistent with cancer, no abnormalities type diagnosis, which gives everybody peace of mind. So I think there's a lot of value there. I have seen this used in patients who have enlarged lymph nodes and potentially maybe other diagnostics are not feasible for whatever reason, whether that's because of finances, whether that's because we have some clients who are just not in favor of doing aspirates or other more what they would call invasive means of trying to find a diagnosis. We've seen that. We've seen it alongside pathology, so alongside cytology and histopathology to get additional information or to maybe get information a little bit faster since the turnaround time is so short. And we've also seen it in cases where we have some maybe nebulous signs that aren't really pointing slam dunk to lymphoma, maybe some nebulous GI signs or something like that. Do a cancer DX, it comes back consistent with lymphoma. That makes the clinician say, hey, you know, there's something maybe here with these, this is a sick patient, but it's not really, you know, your classic lymphoma look, let's look a little bit deeper. And then they go on to later confirm lymphoma. So we've had a lot of different cases that we've seen for this. And I think that it's really helping to just give those initial insights in the field. We've heard really, really positive things from the field about the test since it's been out.
Yeah, lymphoma is a great master of disguise, I feel like. And that's where when it's an aid in diagnosis type test that you have that available, it's super beneficial for lymphoma specifically because it can be such a beast and it can present and look like so many other things and can be very difficult to get a diagnosis on.
And I think I got to give a shout out to IDEXX because I know personally that they provide a lot of great literature and brochures for the team, the veterinary team, and to clients, because we know that it's a sensitive subject to talk about. And so, you know, just kind of leveraging some of the tools that are out there to get a little bit more of a buy-in to doing this type of test, I think is really helpful.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely been a push for both specialty and general practitioners to have the appropriate materials available to make this conversation more streamlined. I wouldn't say that it necessarily makes the conversation easier because we know that a cancer conversation always comes with emotion. And I think that all of us have that little piece of dread of going into a room and confirming, even as oncologists, like I don't like doing that either, going into a room and confirming that a dog has cancer, whether it be lymphoma or otherwise. And I think it does help to streamline the conversation and make it more approachable for our veterinarians, because we know that it's a conversation that needs to be had. If we have fear stepping into that conversation, then I think that just delays our diagnostics, it delays our treatment, and ultimately it does impact the quality of life of our patients.
Zach, why should veterinarians consider incorporating Cancer DX into their routine wellness testing recommendations for at-risk dogs?
Yeah, great question. I mean, it goes back to the earlier comments of catching lymphoma early, I think is very important, right? And just getting them in the door, getting them into an appointment slot with an oncologist. And this helps bridge that gap. But even from the standpoint of what Dana was just saying, we're having some peace of mind to be able to say, okay, like there are clients who they want to do everything they can to make sure that their pet doesn't have cancer in general. Not that this is a catch-all cancer test, it is specific for lymphoma, but we have clients who have had other pets where they've had a pet with lymphoma and they want to make sure that their pet doesn't have lymphoma. And they ask me, how do I make sure my other pets don't have this? We've always had to say, there is no way. You just have to wait until boom, it's there and they have big lymph nodes. And it's really an awful answer to have to tell a client, like there is no way and to tell, and there is no blood work test that we've been able to use until now. I mean, this is, you know, somebody asked like, how do I test and make sure that a pet doesn't have X, Y, or Z? It's still not really feasible at the 100% level. But we have a great test that we can use to say, it's very unlikely. And if it does come back positive, it's very believable that it's real. I think that, you know, just from the, you're already talking about doing blood work. You're already talking about doing a health profile for that pet. It is something that's easily incorporated into that health profile to just have that peace of mind and just to make sure that, yep, we don't have concerns that are visible or findable right now. I think there's a large clientele there that would, you know, be open to that. But I think it's the trouble of just getting to that step, that hurdle of saying, this is okay to talk about, this is okay to offer to clients. I think we're often too fearful of what that price tag looks like as it goes up and up and up. But we have to recognize that's not for us to decide. That's for the client to decide, what are they wanting to spend their money on? And it's, you know, here's what it is. And it's not that much of an addition from the cost standpoint. And if it does help those clients just with peace of mind, I see that it's highly worth it.
So Zach, I have a question for you. As an oncologist, and as me as a generalist, how do we leverage the team, the veterinary team, when we're talking about something that's so sensitive of a cancer diagnosis or making a recommendation for utilizing the IDEXX Cancer DX?
No, yeah, great question. From my standpoint as an oncologist, I leverage my team day in, day out. I utilize my nursing veterinary technician staff. I use them for phone calls and for results when I can. I use them to talk to owners about things that, you know, sometimes I just don't have the time to go over every single detail or every supplement or management of maybe side effects. And that's where I utilize that team to step in. And I think it's the same thing. You have to utilize the team that you have to be able to keep up with the caseload that we're seeing. And so if it's, you know, you've already talked to the client and you've recommended doing their annual blood work, a senior health panel, and you have mentioned you incorporating the Cancer DX test, the technicians and the front desk staff, whoever it is, your CSRs, your vet techs, can come in behind you and reinforce that idea of, hey, this has been a great help or a great addition to our clinic to be able to run this test to catch cases where they are positive for lymphoma and we're able to follow them more closely. So I think it's just that multi-layered approach is way more beneficial than I think most people appreciate. So it's hitting them, you know, not hitting them, but discussing it first, a second time, hey, wait, why are they mentioning this over and over again? And I think it's just, you know, that multi-approach. I think Dana, when you were in clinics, did you utilize your team a lot too for helping manage cases and side effects and such?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it would be unmanageable for us to have every single conversation. I mean, there were days where we saw 19 to 20 patients, and to a generalist that may be kind of par for the course, right? For oncologists and specialists, it's a tiny bit different just because the conversations may be a little bit more drawn out. And so having such trust in our technicians and our CSRs to carry that message and faithfully carry the message back to us of what questions there were from the client, immensely important. I think that on the front end, like you were saying, Zach, to say, you know, this is a really good way to go. It's a good test to do. This is how we can support you. I think that there's also some additional help on the back end, so to speak. Let's say you get that result, and as a generalist, you don't quite know what to do with that result, whether it's on Cancer DX or really any test, right? I mean, there's a ton of tests out there that we have to cram into our brains and then try to figure out what to do with the results and how they look in that specific clinical picture. And I think that there's unfortunately still areas of the states where we have specialist deserts. We don't have ready access to a specialist to help us with some of those situations. And so IDEXX has our MCS colleagues, our medical consultants that are your phone-a-friend that you can call. They're specialists. We have oncologists, we have internists, we have dermatologists. I mean, you name it, we have it to give you that support so that you have a team approach. I mean, maybe you're a single practicing doctor and you just need someone to bounce ideas off of. This is a great way to do that. So I think utilize your support staff in the moment and know that you have backup as well. You have a team that's surrounding you and a network that can support you through the decision-making as well.
Great. Dana, what's next for IDEXX Cancer DX?
What a great question, and something really exciting to me, because I will say that transitioning out of the clinic and into the space of medical affairs, my job is to not only help curate what's on market right now with Cancer DX, but take all the great innovation that research and development is doing and kind of pull that thread through. And so we are, we're going to be doing some expansions in the next few years, which is really exciting. I get asked all the time what cancers are next. We are committed to adding additional cancers to the panel. By the time it's all over, covering over 50% of the cancer diagnoses that we would make in the clinic. And these are the ones that we really care about, the ones that are life-threatening to our patients, that we want to intervene earlier. We want to monitor them earlier, catch them earlier. And we want to be able to offer this globally. So right now we are in the States, we're in Canada. I mentioned those specific turnaround times earlier. But we are committed to bringing this to really the world in the next 36 months. So very, very exciting time for us. A lot is happening. I also get asked pretty frequently about other species. I would say the most common question I get is about cats, but I've been asked about horses, and I've been asked about random exotics as well. Pandas. I'm not really sure where all those questions come from, but we are committed to finishing out the canine panel and then exploring potentially other species. So stay tuned, because a lot is going to be changing in the next few years. It's a really, really exciting time to be in oncology.
It really is. And as we're wrapping up, Dana, do you mind just sharing a story with us or a case that you've experienced with this journey?
Sure, sure. So I think the one that comes to mind the most in the most ready fashion for me would be a case of, unfortunately, a golden retriever that went into their primary care veterinarian for enlarged lymph nodes. So unfortunately, it's one of those situations where, you know, we all as generalists and also specialists, we look at that dog and we say, it's the right age, it's the right breed, it's the right symptoms. This is probably lymphoma. And as so often happens, that initial cytology done by a fine needle aspiration of a lymph node was of low cellularity. The cells that were there were lysed. We know that the lymphocytes are just, it's a really fragile population. So even for those of us who do fine needle aspirations all the time, it's really easy to lyse those cells and make it so that it's very difficult to get a diagnosis based on the cytology alone. So this patient went home. We didn't end up getting a diagnosis, or the general practitioner didn't end up getting a diagnosis from that initial cytology. Patient came back in. Of course, those lymph nodes were still enlarged at that time, had a cancer DX done as well as a repeat cytology. And within 2 days of having that cancer DX done, that result was consistent with lymphoma and able to offer a phenotype of B cell. And so they were able to go directly to the oncologist after that. We had an oncologist in the area who took them in as a very immediate referral, because as Zach was mentioning, we want to get these guys in ASAP when we think that they have lymphoma. And cytology ended up confirming that diagnosis again, you know, I would say a few days later, just based on that turnaround time. And that patient is undergoing chemotherapy now and doing really, really well. Their parents are really, really happy that she had that test done so that they could get to the oncologist faster. So those are the kind of clinical impacts we're talking about. Getting that patient in before they become sick, we know we can have a positive effect and really improve the outcome if we institute that treatment prior to them entering that substage B or becoming sick from their lymphoma.
Yeah, great. Timing is so, so crucial with things like this. Excellent conversation. Dr. Dana Connell and Dr. Zach Newman, thank you so much for joining this wonderful conversation.
Thank you so much for having us.
Of course. And thank you for IDEXX for sponsoring this great conversation. To the listeners, don't forget to answer those questions to obtain your CE race credit for this great conversation. And don't forget to rate this podcast, because we continue to grow as always here on the Vet Blast podcast. And we'll see you next time. Thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.